There are two races coming up in mid-June and July that we can all compete in despite the uncertainty about restrictions. Yep, you heard correctly. Rapid Ascent are conducting some 5, 10, and 15K virtual races as part of their trail running series that sound pretty cool. All runners start at the exact same time, and you can race whatever course you have access to. It could be on the roads, on a path, or on a trail, whichever is preferred. You can check out more details at www.trailrunningseries.com.au. Enjoy the episode.
Pain. Now I hear you say you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the sugar of my skin, I burn all your names. If it's all the same, I'll keep on walking.
Welcome to episode number 133 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. Welcome to my co-host down in Ballarat first this week, Julian Spence. How are you going?
Good. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm going good, thanks. I was actually running and thinking about you tonight because I was thinking about this introduction and I was trying to place where you might be in the all-time runners list of people that run in Ballarat.
Oh, low.
Yeah, well, I definitely had obviously Mona, Collis and Watto in front of you, but I wasn't sure, like Benson obviously as well. And do you reckon
Tony Benson, Graham Crouch, Shane Van Gervis.
Do you reckon you're top 10?
Then you've got Dizzy Lynch was a good runner.
Sean Crichton was there for a while.
Oh, well, if you're going to pick up people that were there for a while.
Yeah, you're talking Troopy and Mottram, but no, I wouldn't have Sean Crichton in there. Do you reckon you're top 10?
I'm definitely not. No, I don't think so. Okay. Because there was, if you look at who's run the lake, you could look at the top 10 lake times and you're getting guys like Dewey Yoa.
Stewie.
So you got Stewie. Well, yeah.
Jack Davies.
Stewie, fucking not Davies. Give that a spell.
But if you look at 2:14, that would have you in top 10, wouldn't it?
Maybe for the marathon. But you got guys that used to run sub 30 like every weekend. You got guys that you got Brian Lurie. So Brian Lurie, he was an Australian cross country representative for something like 6 or 7 years. You got guys like the Johnson brothers, who I think both ran 2:16, but they used to dominate. You got like people that won AV cross countries like all the time. I know Paul Burge won a 10K AV. Oh no, he won the 10-mile cross country 1 year. Yeah, if you look back, you got guys that have run in the 13, like under 14 minutes consistently. So it's a very strong running town.
Struggle to get top 20 maybe, hey?
Look, in the marathon, yeah. So you've got Mona, obviously, and then you've got Shane, and then probably me, I think. Yeah, I think that's me next. You got a guy called Rod McKinnon who was the first Australian to break 220. So at the time, held the Australian record. So he did that at Fukuoka. That was in the 60s.
That's a good history lesson for you. And Brad Croker up in Canberra, how are you going?
I'm good. Revitalised after a few days down at the coast. Got back this afternoon.
Down the coast, catch up with family?
So we stayed at Viv's parents' place in Bateman's Bay, and then we went up to visit my parents most of Saturday.
Yeah, it was good. We had my parents up here as well. It was good seeing family after not seeing them for so many weeks. With kids as well, especially, it kind of felt like it was even more special.
Yeah, we've just had to do lots of FaceTime with with my parents. Viv's parents see Lily a fair bit, but yeah, my parents haven't seen Lily for probably like 2 months.
Yeah, that's hard. Let's talk about some run stuff, hey? Take us through your week, Bradley.
All right. Hopefully this audio gets a bit better. I think I might be cutting out a little bit.
No, you sound good at this end.
Okay. Oh, cool. Monday did my two laps of Mulligans at 4:14, so that was 14.5K. And then in the afternoon, went out for 35 minutes at 4:12s and did my six 10-second hill sprints. Felt pretty good doing them off the back of just 26K on the Sunday, so a bit shorter that week. Then Tuesday morning, what did I do? Just standard Mulligans loop, 8.2K, 4:17s. Then for Tuesday afternoon, I went out to the Stromlo cross country course. I was originally going to do hill reps up the road to Mount Stromlo. There's an observatory up there. But I was told by Josh Johnson that the road had been closed during the corona thing to stop people from going up there. It's a bit of a tourist attraction. So I didn't even go and check it out. I just decided to go straight to the cross country course and do a session there. Session was 2.5K, 2K, 1.5K, 1K, 500, all off a 500 float. It's really cool, the cross country course, because there's so many different sort of loops you can do. So there's like the biggest loop you can do is like 2.5K. Then there's a 2K loop. There's a 1.5K loop and there's a 1K loop. So really a good way of just breaking up the session. You're not sort of going over the same course the whole time. Felt actually pretty strong doing this. I don't go off my GPS out there because it's not accurate at all. So I just go off the markers. So ran like 7:53 for the 2.5K loop, which is the 2.5 and the 1.5 are a bit short. They have since added on an extension, but I don't do the extension during training because it's just a bitch of a hill. So
just to fill in, so you don't go off your watch because it doesn't measure right, but then the lap short as well.
No, yeah, but so...
But we still call it 2.5.
Yeah, we call it 2.5K because before the... so the cross-country course has been around for quite a while now and the extension was never actually put in initially. So I've done lots of sessions out there before the extension was put in. And anybody that's run at the course, you'll know that it's that first hilly section. It's like this 30-metre just steep hill and I just don't need to do that when I'm doing this sort of session. So anyway, so it's 7:53 for the 2.43 or something like that. It's probably 60 metres short, something like that.
And before you start racking off times, give me some more details about this course because when I ran it, so that extension was never there. Is that what you're telling me? And then they added that hill, up the hill and then down it. That added that on to make it a 2.5K loop.
Yeah. So so when you start off, you take the first left and you go up the hill. It's like a 500 meter section.
Yeah, it's a
pretty. But it wasn't quite 500 meters. But then at the top of that hill, to make it 500 meters, they've added another steep little section on. But that never used to be there when the course was first built.
Ah, okay. So that like hill was always there, but they just made the hill a bit bigger.
Yeah, they made a real steep pinch. And people will know what I mean by that steep pinch.
How many years ago did they make that?
I reckon maybe two. It was just before National Cross in like 2016.
Yeah, no, I was before that then. I think I did in 2014.
Yeah, so the 1K loop's always been accurate and the 2K loop's always been accurate. It's just that the 2.5K loop, which incorporates that first 500-metre hill, was never 500 meters. So
you ever ran on it, Moose, this course?
No. I've watched video, but never run on it.
It's beautiful. Surface.
Yeah, the surface is good. And like there's a good variety of rolling hills and also flat sections. So like it's just perfect for winter cross country training, really. Anyway, so ran like 7:53 for the short 2.5K loop. All my floats were around like 3:40K pace. The 2K loop, I ran in 6:20. The 1,500 meter loop, which includes that short section, was like 4:25. The 1K loop, I ran in 3 minutes. And the first 500 meters of the K loop, I ran in 85 seconds. So, I was really happy with how I felt. I was recovering really well on all the floats. That was a fun session. And I'll do a few more variations of that. Like another one you could do is like 1K, 1.5, 2K, 2.5, and then come back down if you want to make it a bit longer. Then Wednesday morning, an hour 45. So that was 25.7K at 404s, which, yeah, felt okay. Like Wednesdays after a Tuesday night sort of session can always be a bit of a grind, but I find the midweek long run for me is like training for marathons anyway is so valuable, especially on tired legs after Tuesday. Thursday was a super cruisy day for me before we headed to the coast. Just ran 11K out at Mulligan's at 411s. And then we drove to the coast that afternoon. Friday morning, just did 35 minutes, started in Batemans Bay and just ran along sort of the water. It's like nice and flat. Awesome day. Like we had the best weather, like every single day. It was like 17 degrees, sunny, no wind whatsoever. So yeah, that was 35 minutes at 409s. And then did my session in the afternoon. And yeah, I felt amazing. Like even warming up, like I warmed up 408s and just, yeah, like there was no wind. Got to put on the, can I mention it, Moose? The shoes that I got to wear?
Yeah, sure.
So it was, yeah, so what I'd explain this session was it's the perfect storm, really. It was, I'd come off an easy week last week. The weather was awesome. I was down at sea level and I was putting on, yeah, a new pair of shoes, which, you know, aren't released yet. The Saucony Endorphin Pro.
Saucony,
sorry. Can't take the bogan out of me. Yeah, so the Endorphin Pro. And so the session was 10 times 1 minute with 1 minute float. So this was always going to be like my more sort of intense session for the week. And yeah, look, like always run quicker down there. There's obviously a little bit of GPS error, but I averaged three minute Ks for the 20 minutes, 2:48 average for the reps and 3:13 average for the floats. And it was one of those sessions where, like, I felt like I couldn't run any faster on the ons, but I was recovering super quick during the floats, and for me, that's a sign that I'm getting strong because I just can't really bury myself in the 1 minute. I physically just couldn't run any faster in the 1 minute. But the shoes were amazing. Like we'll do a review in a couple of weeks. But in terms of they had the pop of like other carbon plated shoes, but for 1 minute reps, some of like, you know, the next percent and things like that, they're a little bit chunky through the heel, but you don't have that with these shoes. So, I was a massive fan of them. But, so got through just under 6.7K for the 20 minutes. And to put it into perspective, I did that same session with Matt Johnson October, and I was 200 metres up the road this time around, and I was actually going pretty well in October. So I was pretty happy with how that session went. Saturday morning, I headed out to down in Mogo, this road called Runnyford Road, just for an hour, 411s. It's reasonably undulating down through there. Then we headed up to Ulladulla, spent the day up there with my family. And then when we got back home, just did 8.5K around Surfside at 408s. And then Sunday, met Matt Johnson. And we ran Runnyford Road again. So I did the first 2 hours or so with him. So he did like 28K or 29K. I did 34.6K in 2 hours, 20 at 402s, which, it's not an easy run out there. It had nearly 600 metres of climbing. So it's 171.2K for the week. So it was one of, probably one of the best training weeks I've had in a long time. Like both sessions were good. Two long runs, back to an easier week this week.
This workout, you've actually hit some pretty good splits when you're running a straight line as well. I'm just looking up now.
Yeah, like it's... Yeah,
I was going to flag it with the dodgy GPS stuff, but then I'm looking at it closer now, just going, yeah, hit some quick reps, not turning some corners.
Yeah, look, I'm sure it's probably 302, 303 sort of average, not 3 minutes, but just the way I felt doing it and having done other sessions down there... you know, like I averaged 305s last time I did that session, and I was running pretty well then. So, it's good signs. I feel like I'm in a pretty good place. I just need to be careful now because I've sort of been in this situation a lot in the last 20 years where I do these couple of sessions and string together a couple of really good weeks, I'm like, all right, I know I'm going well. And then you just either keep it going too long, or you just push the envelope a little bit and you then miss 4 weeks. So I just need to make sure I don't do that.
I love how you did the last 1 minute float at 3:03 pace as well.
Yeah, but like that was seriously, like this session was like, I could have done another 5 reps. Like have you guys ever had that where you just feel like physically I couldn't run any faster in the 1 minute ons? And then from a marathon point of view, it gives me confidence because like I'm super strong at the moment. But if I was looking at this from like wanting to run a good 5K, like I know at the age that I'm at now, there's going to be some limitations on how fast I can run a 5K because I just physically can't run any quicker over like, you know, the 400 or in that 1 minute. But within 30 seconds of floating, I was ready to go again. So it's generally a good sign. But have you guys experienced that? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, when you can't go much quicker, but you can go for longer. Is that what you're talking about?
Like, you're just recovering super quick off really solid. Like you feel like you're running really hard for a minute, but you're not getting lactic and you're recovering, you know, within 30 seconds off a decent float.
Yeah, you find that
the opposite a lot.
Moose, yeah, well, actually, you get that a bit.
It's funny you say that, Moose, because when I'm sort of coming back or I'm not as fit as I would like to be, I find I get through 10 to 12 minutes of this session and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going great. And then I get to 14 minutes and I'm like, oh shit. And there's basically then no pace change between the ons and the offs. I'm just cooked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas there was definitely in all of my reps, there was a real distinct pace change, but I just couldn't go any quicker for the ons.
Brad, a couple of questions for you. First one, you enjoy the Styx beer, so you celebrated that session with one of those, the old Grim Sweeper, the new one.
Yeah, I took a selection down actually, so I had a fair few Styx beers over the weekend. Yeah, it was very good.
I'm having one of those now, very tasty. Thanks, Styx. But the more serious question is, you talk so much about this is good for a marathoner or good for marathon training. Like at your stage in your life, do you just disregard every other distance now and just focus on the marathon for where you really want to improve?
At the start of this year, like I wrote down some goals and one was to like get back to running a 5K again. And like, I still would love to run a good 5K. Like I don't feel like I've ever run a very good one. But I'm also realistic and I know that I have more room to improve from a strength point of view than I do from a speed point of view. So in other words, I have room to improve over the marathon, probably not so much over the shorter stuff. So I'm just being realistic with where my strengths are. And I may as well play to those strengths, but I'm over the last probably 8 weeks, I've definitely been trying to do more speed work. You know, like every couple of weeks, I'll have one session in there that's very more track specific, but I'm conscious of just still trying to get stronger and stronger and stronger because that's what's going to make me a better marathoner.
Yep. Well put. A lot of froth over these shoes as well. I haven't tried them yet, but you two boys are pretty keen. I think Moose, you're going to tell us more about how they went on the track.
Yeah, I did a workout on the track in them. But
start with Monday,
like,
though.
Like Brad said, we'll talk about them in more depth when we review them properly.
Yeah.
Monday, yeah, I do my easy run. So in the morning, 8K. Just jogged up through the golf course. Few golfers back now, unfortunately. Ruining my golf course running. Haven't been there all week. Monday it was packed. You know, it's more packed than the trails at the moment, the golf course. Next run was a 14K run down out to Brown Hill and back. I feel good on Monday nights. So I'd like it. Tuesday morning ran a loop. Call it the Mount Clear loop. Like it just runs down along this creek up and over a hill, tip hill, because it's where the tip used to be. Back past the gold mine area. And then home. So rolled that. Then in the afternoon, put a new shoe on, Brooks Glycerin 18. Enjoyed it. Just a different, like, there's a lot of shoes with heaps of pop and bounce to them. But sometimes you just love the feeling of a stable base, and that's what this shoe gives me. So nice to put a new shoe on and go for a jog.
Just an episode of Shoe Geeks in your comments there. Just 19 comments talking about shoes.
Yeah, I love blokes telling me what shoes I should wear. That's a real highlight.
Triggers your Moose?
It fucking triggers me, all right. Yeah, I'm holding myself back pretty well, I think. But yeah, imagine like, all right, let's move on. next day, got out for a jog, took Cedric for a run around the oval. He's been good, Cedric. He's getting better. He's getting well, more behaved as he gets older, which I like, kind of like me, I think. That afternoon, did a workout on the track. So I did 10 800s, and the idea was to cut down. So with 400 being the point that I start kicking down. So I was supposed to go 400 in like 72, and then the next 400 in about 68. And when I got this on the program a few weeks ago, I thought, fucking hell, that's rough. That's a tough session. I can't do that, especially 10 reps, because I looked at the volume. I'm like, that's a high volume session.
Oh, yeah. But, the work at sub 3 pace.
That's what I said. And I said to Ali this. I'm like, what the fuck are you thinking? This is too much. And
what did she say? Shut up and do it?
She said, just go a bit slower if you have to. And she said, I really like the high volume sessions on the track. I said, oh, good. Okay. Well, right. Well, so I got out there and I ended up doing it. I was running the 70. The first lap was too hard. Although it's only 1 second, when you kind of get to this point, 1 second kind of makes a difference over the course of 8K on the track. And then so the first six were all 71, 68, pretty much bang on. And then they started to creep out a bit to like 72. And then I couldn't really drop. There were a few 71, 70s where I thought I was getting quicker, but I was just working a lot harder.
And a minute 10 recovery. Why a minute 10?
Minute 10. Well, why a minute?
I don't know. Just a nice round number.
Yeah. Well, so it was 7.
Why do we do these things?
Yeah, no, a minute 10 probably because, I don't know, a minute, I needed that 10 seconds though. Like a minute was not enough. This was a really challenging session, but I had in my head, I thought 8's the perfect number of reps for this and that would still be a difficult session. So when I got to 8, I was like under my breath, like fucking hell, why would I do these 2 more? I should stop. But then it feels like you got to do it. You got a session in front of you and you physically can do it. I physically did it. And like, I was pretty cooked that night. I haven't done a lot of hard sessions in the evening, but I got like the stomach kind of upset from having a tough workout and you can't really eat dinner that much. And that night I slept like shit. I was super dizzy, like walking off the track. It just put me in a real hole. I haven't had a session like that for ages.
So, Moose, what would have you changed? Would have you gone more like 73, 74, cutting down to 68, or would you have gone maybe 90 seconds recovery?
I would have gone less reps. I think that was pretty much perfect, but maybe too much volume for me. Because at 8 reps, I was hitting the splits good, and I would have walked off the track knowing I'd done a good quality session, and I would have been able to, like, I would have felt better. The last 2 reps kind of put me in a pretty good hole. Maybe you need them once or so a month. But that's what we talked about afterwards. I'm like, you probably don't want to be giving these sessions out to many people. I feel like this is a really, like, this would destroy people.
Like we used to always do, like, if we were doing sort of higher intensity 800s, we would often do them off like a 4-minute cycle. So, you know, like here you'd be getting what, 130, 140 sort of thing if you're running 220s.
You would probably go quicker than what I was going though.
I don't know. Like it's even off that, like, but then you get to just focus more on form and, you know, you're not completely burying yourself.
A bit
more recovery.
The kick down breaks it up nicely. So you kind of got the whole four. I just look at it as 4 quarters of the 800. So 200, 200, 200, 200. And I would just, like, if you break it down like that, you should be feeling pretty good at halfway. I know 10 800s. Mm-hmm. What's that? 8 1Ks, really. In terms of volume, it's just done a little bit quicker, maybe, for me. But yeah, no, I wore the Endorphin Pros, and I think I messaged I messaged someone afterwards saying, this is the best shoe that I've worn on the track.
You put that on your Strava, said, don't at me.
Yeah, don't. That was after yesterday's shoe chat on my Strava. Don't stir me up about this one. But
that's a very big call because you were a fan of the next percent on the track.
Well, yeah, but I always struggled a little bit with the lack of response because of the high stack height, and there's a bit of instability turning the bend. This is different. This shoe doesn't have like the thickness, and it feels more rigid, and it feels slightly more rocked, and there's less heel stack, and it just feels like you're a little bit more up on your midfoot. It's got its strengths for sure. Where like the question mark for this shoe is what happens after 2 hours in it, and that's what we'll like. One of us needs to go out and do a hard long run. You'll do it. Good. I'll program it.
And I give it to Brad. He does them every Sunday. But what I was going to ask is the big thing with the next percent after being on the track is you tend to pull up really good. So how did you feel the day after doing faster track stuff in it?
Yeah, this is a really difficult one because I've not been on the track for a while. So I would expect to be sore from running fast regardless of the shoe I wear.
Yeah, yep.
And a lot of people sort of get confused with that where they blame the shoes they put on for their sore calves or whatever, because they only wear them for when they do speed work, but they ignore the fact that doing speed work loads your calves more heavily because you're really toeing off a lot stronger. And anyway, for me, I pulled up in my legs just as fine with this shoe versus the next percent, and certainly a lot better than the something like a Streak LT, where you're really like traditional low profile flats or spikes even. So yeah, plus there in that box, tick that box. Next day had two easy runs, got them done. Friday went out in the morning, did that brown hill loop again, that was good. Then I bought Bree a mountain bike, an e-mountain bike, which is like a motorized mountain bike. So we hired one in St. Moritz for her so she could ride around while we trained, and it was so much fun. Like, you go up a hill, you don't even have to work. The motor kicks in when you put more pressure through the pedal, so it's so much fun. And she took that out for a ride with me.
What did I say about money growing on trees down there a couple of weeks ago, Brad?
Yeah,
it's not a new toy for the Spencers.
Not real blue collar, is it?
She can't pedal at 430k pace.
What, you never bought your wife a present?
Plenty of presents.
Yeah.
My wife actually rode with me on one day last week, but she pedaled.
Did she? Yeah, I bet she complained about it too.
Real blue collar.
I tell you what, she would have loved the motor in her bike. Yeah. I might send her a message, send her the link for it.
Carly's like Cadell Evans up here on the trails. Anyway, keep going.
Brady, after your description where she rode with you, I don't think she'll ride with you again.
Yeah, talk about that in my week, Brad. She loved it.
All right, next morning, did a workout on the lake. I had a 20-minute threshold, 5 minutes jog, and then 5x300 with a 100-meter walk recovery. The day before, Ferg, he said he wanted to run 19 minutes for the lake, which is 3:10s. And so I thought, this will work out real well. So I jumped in with him. We went through like to 4K fine, 4K it was okay. I was thinking I was working a bit hard though. We're about 3:12s. I wasn't feeling very good this day. This wasn't great. And then my shoelace come undone. And this isn't like a booty or shoe or anything. I was in the endorphins again, and I was starting to work a bit hard at the same time. So I ran for a K from 4 to 5, and we went 3:05 that K. Started to cook myself a little bit, like for a threshold anyway. The purpose of the workout was sort of getting destroyed by the fact we were kicking way down so that Ferg could get his 19 minutes. And then I decided like at about – like 5.2K, I guess, to stop and do my lace up. And he ran off and ended up running 3 minutes for the last K and running 18:49. So that was big for him. Mm. And I did my 300s. I ran 48s to 52s just along the lake. Fucking lake is packed at the moment.
On the road or the sandy path?
It's a bit of both.
Jeez, that's quick for you.
Yeah, there's a tailwind where I'd run 48s and then a headwind where I'd run the 51s or 52s, I guess. So it was good. I felt like after the threshold where I'm like, this should be so much easier. It was good to get the 300s in and actually feel like I come away from it pretty good.
Moose, how are you finding, because I noticed recently you've been doing a lot more afternoon sessions. Do you feel better on the afternoon sessions than you do in the morning sessions?
Yeah, way better.
Yeah, you must be getting old like me. And it's tough though, because I like to get it, like I hate it hanging over my head all day, but I know that the session's going to be better and my body's going to respond better if I do it in the afternoon. So it's a tough one.
It's crazy how much higher my heart rate is in the mornings. And I even had my friend Brett Coleman, like get in touch. Like I had him check in with Andre LaGersh, the cardiologist, and I sent him through like a history of my runs and the differential in my heart rate from morning to afternoon with pace and everything put down. And he said, I just said, can you have a look at this? Because it seems like it's really strange. And he came back and said, like, it's very unlikely there's anything of concern going on. The fact that there's times when you can exercise normally at your high level is reassuring. The fact that your heart rate doesn't unexpectedly jump is good. It goes up with exercise as expected, but sometimes to a level higher than you'd expect for your RPE. The high morning heart rates may well be related to an exaggerated normal cortisol response. Not definitely. Cortisol naturally higher in the mornings, and that will bump heart rate up a bit. Given that you exercise to a level much higher than normal, the lack of recovery may mean the heart rate difference for you with this is exaggerated. So he thinks that perhaps, like, because I run so much, my cortisol levels are higher in the morning, and that's what puts my heart rate up a bit. And so I'm less concerned with it now. Yeah.
When you got those bloods done, did you get testosterone?
No, I didn't have that.
Because I had that a couple of years ago, like I've put on like 4 or 5 years ago, and they thought it was that cortisol stuff as well. And they made me get a blood test and go out and smash 15 minutes at threshold and then come back in and get another blood test, like straight away, and like get my heart rate up to a certain pace to just check that my cortisol level was responding like how it should do it. It was a really interesting one, yeah. And it turned out all good. So then they said, well, it's not a cortisol issue. And it turned out it was just an overtraining issue. I was just doing way too many Ks and my body weight was too low. But yeah, when you just brought that up then, I thought that could be something to do with it.
Testosterone, yeah, like pretty good. I think you get a pretty good idea if testosterone's going all right. Apparently, anyway.
That's why he's buying the bikes.
That was a good, that felt good to get a good bit of reassurance, though, I guess. And then that afternoon, yeah, I bought this speaker for the bike too. So yeah, it was birthday presents. Come on. And
whose birthday? Like Bree's.
Oh, it's hers tomorrow, actually. That's a good reminder.
Happy birthday, Bree.
Yeah. So we've got this speaker that clips to the handlebars and it just like pumps tunes. So she's rolling along next to me on the trail. Yeah, very funny. It was at 4:40, so the light was still out. Heaps of families out playing gangster rap down along the trail. I was vibing to it. We were all having a good time. Then we went down to Anglesey the next day or that night and did a long run down there. So met Point Road night, ran 30K. I ran 4:12s, running with Blake, Pete and Hutchie. We were in a group with more people, but within 2 kilometres, one of us had gone on the wrong turn, and so we never saw them again until fucking 2 hours later because they went a different way. So that was like a bit of a fuck-up for the group because we were supposed to have a nice big group run, but ended up like us. I thought they were ahead of us, which they were, but they went down a different road, so we kind of pushed the pace to try to catch them, but they never showed up. So that put me in a hole. My gels were with Bree, who was in the other group, so I missed all my gels, and I was I was fucked at the end, to be perfectly honest. If I had another hill to get up, I would have nearly had to walk. So that was a draining morning.
Hey, Moose, another question about all, like, because I know that you were a big fan of doing fasted long runs, but since you've been chatting to your dietitian, that seems to have changed.
Yeah, I think there's the benefit of for the recovery. I haven't actually had a decent conversation about that yet. That was one thing that I flagged when I got the instructions. I'm like, yeah, I want to have a chat about this because maybe it's not something that aligns with my own personal sort of training, like coaching versus diet advice might clash a little bit. So yeah, it's probably worth a good conversation, but I think it comes down to how you're going to feel for the rest of the week and the next day and everything versus training benefit.
Yeah.
So I felt shit at the end of that run, but probably because I was used to having a few gels.
Mm.
That evening, I did my Sunday afternoon run, and there was so many people out, and there was running with Matty Freeman, and we were running around. He's got this button-up shirt that he wears running. Just, I don't know why, but he loves it. It's like a short-sleeve button-up dress shirt, and these girls yell out this Commodore, classic Ballarat Commodore, like P-plate, called us cute boys, and then they just kept doing laps. But by the next lap, they called us pussies. And then he got real grumpy with that. And the next lap, he was looking for a brick to throw through the window when they got past. He's like, he goes, can you fight? Like, no, I can fight.
Self-proclaimed best friend fighter in Australia.
I'm like, I can't fight for shit. Let's not get in a fucking fight. I'm really good at talking about how good I am at fighting. Don't test it. So that was a good week, 175k in the end, and I'm having a down week this week, so forward to it.
Big week. Quickly whip through mine, because we've got Scott coming in about 20 minutes time. Monday, 12k at 421s. Felt real poppy. Like, I just knew, because I was just running off the stopwatch when I was out jogging, but I was thinking, this is good. I've got a bit of poppy for a Monday, so I was quite surprised when I saw 421s. At the end of that, because I'm usually a bit slower than that. 8K in the afternoon at 4:23s on Monday. Tuesday, I didn't teach, so we did the longer workout just to make things work with life and scheduling for the week. So it was 16K, met up with Archie. We did 16K at 3:14s, then a 3-minute jog, and then 10 by 15 seconds hard with 15 seconds easy between it. So that's kind of like 5 minutes worth of work at the end of a workout. Those 15 seconds, they're just a prick at the end of workouts, Moose. Like, that 5 minutes was harder than the whole 16K kind of put together. Just when you're tired and having a sprint all out at that stage, got smoked by Archie at the end there. But it was a good workout. I haven't done a long workout like that for a while, so it was good to kind of practice that concentration when you're doing longer workouts like that and lock it into a pace and trying to keep things consistent and smooth. So, all up, that was like 18.5K at 3:18 average. In the afternoon, I did 30 minutes easy at 4:35 pace. Wednesday was a recovery day. Did 14K in the morning at 4:21s and 6.5K in the afternoon at 4:30s. Thursday morning, 14K with some 20 second strides with 40 seconds jog between them. So that come out at 4:13 average. And the afternoon I did 7K at 4:10s. And like the last 3 or 4K were kind of right on 4 minutes or under 4 minutes. So I was feeling super recovered from my workout on Tuesday. And yeah, that's rare for me to be running low kind of 4 minute Ks unless it's kind of a Sunday. Friday had another recovery day, so it was 12K in the morning at 4:19s. The first frost we had up here, so it was pretty nippy, kind of the inside run podcast beanie. And
how cold?
I think
you're talking to blokes who live in cold cities.
You blokes don't get it though. We get like, because we're inland so far from the ocean, it gets really cold here in winter. Not as cold as Ballarat and Canberra, I must admit, but I think it was one. Like, yeah, we get frost and stuff. It's pretty cold here in winter. But the thing is, when we have those cold days, it turns into like 20 degrees during the day, the cold mornings. So that's where it comes good. But that was pretty fresh. Actually, Archie and I were talking about buying some gloves off you, and then we looked online and they're selling them for like $70 or something, $40, aren't they?
Well, what? Which one?
Yeah, I don't know.
You said 70. There's good gloves and there's cheaper gloves.
I was thinking I'd just hit you up, like, Moose, send me a pair of gloves, and they'd be like $15 or something. And he was kind of browsing through your website as well. And then on our Sunday run, we both had this same story, how we were both just going to order a pair of $15 gloves, and then they were like $70. I'm like, stuff that.
$15?
Not paying $70 for gloves. I've got Carly's pink ASIC ones at the moment because I lost mine. They make the swag look real good.
Just put some socks over your hands, Brady.
Some dead socks, Brad. That's not a bad idea. Should do that.
Yeah. Runners, you could not find a bigger tight ass community.
Actually,
Zacha, than the running.
If you're listening, work on a glove sponsor for an upcoming show, can you? That'd be really good.
Yeah, me. I'm the sponsor. You buy it off me.
Friday went out for an easy 7.5K at 4:20s, and then the second workout of the week, we were on the track, so we drove over to Shepparton, two sets of 5 400 meters, progressing them every rep with 60 seconds between them. So doing the first one 66, 65, 64, 63, 62, and repeating that twice with a lap jog in between. Absolutely love this workout. I was a bit confused reading the program. I wasn't exactly sure what I if you wanted me to progress the reps or progress the sets, but you were lucky you were on the reply pretty quick and you could help us out during our warm-up on Saturday, Moose, which was good. And then Archie and I just kind of made the plan that we really wanted to try to hit them like perfect in that 66, 65, 64, 63, 62. And yeah, it was kind of a bit of a game for us. We're taking in turns. We're out in lane four because they got those gates at Shepparton Athletics Track, so you can't run in lane one, two, or three. So felt like Kathy Freeman out on the big bend at the end of the track there coming around. But pacing terrible to start off with. Like, I did the first rep, and I was kind of trying to mentor Archie a bit. You know, we just got to settle down. Let's practice doing some 100 meters at 66 pace just to get used to this first rep so we don't stuff it up. Went through 230, and then we ran ran 36 for the last 200, kind of power walking down the home straight, but we hit that 66, and then I said to him, like, don't make the same mistake I did, you're in charge, hit 65, and then I'm sitting behind him, I'm going, oh, this feels pretty easy, but I'm like, just don't say anything, and we went through in 34, and then we had to really wind it up around the bend to run kind of like 30, 31 for the second rep to hit that 65, but then we hit 64, 63, No, we hit 65, 63, 62, 61 in the first one. And then in the next set, we were 66, 63, 63, 62, 61. So he ran 60 for the last rep and just put me away a bit in the last 100 meters. But it was fun. It was good to kind of have that speed. We were both in the next percenters. So, like, it's a heavy and, you know, heavier and chunkier shoe. But, yeah, we can still run pretty fast reps in that shoe. And pulled up amazingly, jogged like easy. Saturday arvo, that's when Carly was on the bike and I gave her a play-by-play of every 400 meter rep from that morning, and I was kind of telling her, I'm like, this was the goal, Archie was meant to hit 64 but he hit 33 on the way through, and then we had to pick it up, and then I think she was over that after about 10 minutes. But anyway,
where was your kid at?
Oh yeah, so my parents came to visit from Bendigo, so they came up on Saturday, which is fantastic because we haven't seen them for a while, and then we're just like, because they wanted to see the kid because they haven't seen him for like 6 weeks, we just made him kind of do everything, and we kind of just pretended, we knew he still existed, but we're like, hey, we can go for a bike ride and run together and go do this and go do that, and yeah, they just loved hanging out with him. Is that good enough, Moose? Yep, happy with that. Didn't just leave him at home sleeping and go for a 30-minute bike ride and run.
Yeah, I'm just trying to work out how you guys still have lives, actually, together.
It's tough.
When you have a kid.
That's tough. But you make it work, hey, just an extra challenge. And then Sunday, went out to the Barmer Pine Forest again, did 2 hours out there, averaged, I think, 4:09s, something like that. Pretty cold out there as well. I think it was like 1 or 2 degrees, beanie and gloves on the whole 2 hours. 29Ks, pretty much on the dot. I think I hit like 166K for the week. So, yeah, good training week. Almost the perfect training week where you get a longer workout and some speed. They're the weeks I like because I think it just covers both the bases and a good long run. And, yeah, 160K, can't complain. Big race coming up in Bendigo in a couple of weeks, Moose. You coming over for it?
Yeah, I don't know. You've
got 10
bibs. Don't know about these 61s getting dropped at the end of sessions.
10 bibs only. If you want to start, if you can run under, if you want to run 29:45, let me know. Get your start in the Bendigo 10K.
Well, that's it. That's the limit, the threshold.
Yeah, I think Buchanan's going to pace it at that pace. It won't be legit though, because I think he'll probably do, I was working it out today, I reckon he'll do 4K, and then we'll have to share a K, and then he'll jump in again for 4K to get us to 9K at kind of like 29.45, 29.50 pace, and then it's going to be on for young and old with a K to go.
Interesting.
So if that suits you, if you're someone out there listening and want to hit out and reckon you might want to sit in that pack, I think I've got about 4 bibs left at this stage. Feeling fast. Not sure when it's going to be though. We're going to wait for weather. Brad, you going to come down?
Probably not. If it was closer, yes.
Yeah, you can get out of ACT though. That border's not closed. Come down to Moama. We can go across the river here at Echuca. That border's not closed, and then we're in Bendigo.
Yeah, but what are you talking like days notice? It's
what do you mean that border's not closed?
Some border's closed.
But aren't you supposed to? Can you go state to state now and not have to self-isolate afterwards?
Yeah, I think you can now. I think we're. Oh, I don't think you can go into South Australia or Western Australia or Northern Territory, but I think you can get out of ACT. You got out of ACT on the weekend, didn't you, Brad?
Yeah, yeah. ACT's never been closed.
Yeah, yeah. We're right up here. Yeah, so we're sounds doing, like no, it's we're not going to do it on a day's notice. We're doing it.
Sounds like
make
an INEOS sub two, where you've got the window and you're just waiting for the perfect conditions.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, why not? It's like we're controlling everything, so. Yeah, I think we're going to make a call on a Tuesday. Like, we'll kind of get 3 or 4 days out and then edit our weeks accordingly. But it's not going to be this week, and then we're waiting to see maybe if we do it next Saturday.
Yeah, I don't think I'll do it.
Why not? Scared. Nah. Scared. When's the last time you did a race?
World River Run. Won it. Oh, yeah. Course record. Done.
Tempo.
What a race to retire on.
Yeah, all right. Let's thank some Patreon supporters, eh? Kick us off, Bradley.
All right. My shout-out this week is to Brendan Belcher. He's from the Canberra. He's from Canberra, I should say. And, yeah, actually, Coach Brendan. He's got PBs of 19.18. He ran 39.59 at Moose's Ballarat Run for a Cause.
Sure.
95 minutes for the half and 3.27 for the marathon in Melbourne. So he's been training really well during the isolation period, and he's looking forward to running some quicker PBs once races start back. He actually sent in a few light-hearted questions as well. So Brady said, have you claimed the crown on the Port of Echuca Strava segment yet?
Not yet, Brendan. Haven't had a go at it for a while, but I might add that to the list of things to do.
Who's got it?
Yeah, your mate from Ballarat. Remember that bloke, that doctor from Ballarat came over and started stealing all these segments off us?
Nah, who's this?
Yeah, remember you were giving me shit about it, like he kind of volunteers, he works as a doctor, goes out for a session, does like a sprint through the Port of Echuca, picks up a crown, and now all the locals are pissed off.
Oh, shit, I can't remember who this is.
Jordan Mayston, I think that is Jordan.
Oh, yeah, Jordan Mayston. He runs for Melbourne Uni, yeah.
Oh, does he? Ballarat guy, though, isn't he?
He lives in Ballarat now, yeah. Doctor here.
Oh, doctor, yeah, that was the guy. Nah.
He's a...
He's a long-time listener if he's bringing up that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and he's written in, he's asked me what session I'm going to do when Viv goes into labour in 5 or 6 weeks' time. Viv, you keen for another Yerribee session?
Yeah.
Yep, so actually hopefully it'll be on a day where I don't have to do a session. And Moose, he's written in, when do we see you versus Earl in a grudge match runoff, best of 3? You pick one distance and route, Earl picks the second run, and the final race is selected by the Inside Running podcast listeners.
What a great concept. Have you had a couple of beers tonight as well, Brad? Starting to slur some words.
No, just reading slow.
Just down on the wacky tobacco down the coast. let's not give the fucking Nick Curl the... Let's not give him the time of day. Let's not give him a platform. We've already given him enough of a platform, seriously. You know, you've given him this little bit of a light or a look in on that other podcast that you set up, and all of a sudden he thinks he can take over.
Well, I reckon it is going well. And I reckon, Moose, you were so you were jealous that podcast was going so well that you had to start up your own one.
That is
the amount of people telling me, fucking get that... the podcast immediately.
Say that.
Hey,
I'm gonna have to be
relaying the information. You can say that. Why not? I love that word.
Yeah.
The listeners love when there's a beep put in.
You can beep it. That's all right.
I'll beep
and
it.
Actually, he did have a more serious question, which is probably for you, Moose. With the delay to the Olympics, are there any shoes that weren't eligible that will become eligible before the 2021 revised date? So would Ellie, for example, be able to wear a different New Balance shoe now than originally planned?
Yeah, basically. So there'll be a few that wouldn't have made the cut. So if the Olympics was, say, like August or whatever, in 2020, there were shoes that weren't released in time, or that they weren't, there wasn't a plan to release them in time. So they'll all be available to the general public before the 4-month period, before 2021 Olympics. So, yep, there are.
Nice. All right. Thank you, Brendan, for your support.
So back to that for a second, Moose. I know we're getting a bit off topic here, but so the shoes, like, say, an Alpha Fly, will that shoe will be invented, won't be used, so will that just get missed in the whole cycle because there's no races on them? By the time races are back, they'll have, like, a newer model. Like Saucony Triumph, like, same thing. Like, they'll be already working on, like, an extension of that, and then when races
Endorphin,
are back,
Endorphin, yeah, so, is it?
Not the Triumph, not the one we use, the heavy one.
Nike already prototype sampling, wear testing the next version of Alphafly, for sure. We are about to see January product from Nike. I've seen January product from ASICS, or not January, but like quarter one product from ASICS. There's nothing really that's going to shake, like, that'll push the limits of the Olympics with that. The Nike one will be interesting to see what's going to be in their range. Because there's a few, like, if you look on the right accounts on social media, you start to see photos of people like that work for Nike, or some athletes that are wear testing shoes, and they're normally, it takes a while before those wear testing shoes actually find their way to market, and so we're going to be seeing some stuff come through hopefully in January. But then again, like, Alphafly was supposed to be released already. It's got pushed back because of the lack of events around, and that.
Oh,
I'm
so
not
reckon
sure.
They'll try to move it to, like, we'll just move it 6 months later, like fit when the races are back.
So I'm not sure exactly the time. I'm not sure at all the timeline that they're going to play with. Whether they normally it's like a 12-month plan for a shoe before it receives some sort of update, and there's differences in different models, but we've seen in the past 12-18 month plans. Maybe because of the delayed release of one model, then their lifespan in the market becomes a little shorter because the new version's ready to go earlier. So, well, I don't know for sure, but that's what I can see happening.
Yeah, right. I might quickly go next, Moose. I'm going to thank John Cox from Bristol over in the UK there. And he wrote in, John, he kind of said, "My friend James, Sam, and I love your podcast so much so that we've been inspired to use this strange time to shamelessly copy the idea, almost exactly. We meet up online every Tuesday and discuss the previous week's training and set each other a workout. They've only done 2 episodes so far. It's called the Single Malt Marathoners." So that's pretty cool, boys, that people are copying exactly what we're doing. There's about 10 podcasts that try to copy exactly what we do.
Christian from Norway copied our podcast, makes a fucking living off it now.
Yeah, you know he's employed by that, like, media company over there. Yeah.
And that was you. You should be claiming some kudos off that. You should be taking some royalties.
Well, I didn't give him any advice. He just listened to us.
Yeah, but he's stolen your idea.
Yeah, anyway, I like John because he's a patron supporter. Christian's a patron supporter
as well. Oh, yeah, no, I'm not having to go at John.
I haven't listened to any John, but I might put it on. See how we go.
Okay, so we can listen. What's it called?
Yeah, I just did say that. It's called the Single Malt Marathoners. They drink whiskey and talk about their running leaks.
That sounds like my kind of podcast.
Yeah.
Actually, I drank too much whiskey last night. I feel like shit today.
Sunday session.
I was about to call in sick for this.
Didn't you have to work this morning?
Nah, I slept in. Jeez. I was in bed later than I've been in bed, like, the last 5 years.
I sent you some emails pretty early this morning as well.
Send me those fucking emails. No way. Phone off.
Who are you thinking?
Michael Peroni. That's a very mafia name, isn't it? Peroni.
Mm.
He's from Heidelberg Heights. Locks his social media down real tight, so... There you go.
Could be the mafia.
Underbelly type thing. could possibly be a podiatrist. 2048 Albert Park run, 148 run Melbourne half, same year as a very weak field up the front. And Brady won that year. Oh, yeah. 306 at Chicago Marathon, swagger score of 8.5 out of 10. What's this based off?
Had a bit of pink on his shorts and ran the marathon in a T-shirt. And he had one of those, they could be running hats, but like, you know, those kind of cyclist hats on backwards. He looked real good crossing the line. I could only just see his Strava kind of display picture because he was on private. That's all I got, but a good swagger score.
There is absolutely no need to run the Melbourne Marathon in a T-shirt, though. That is too hot.
Unless you're working on your swagger score.
Or, yeah, you have a really cool T-shirt, like, yeah, you said. But or you're trying to flex. If you're up in the top front pack and you win the race in a T-shirt, oh, that's just disrespectful.
I think I read somewhere on Strava today, and I was just flicking through it on my break at work, but Jack Rayner making a comment that he only ever wears singlets when he races.
So it's either...
Did you guys see that?
Yeah, but there's a few people like that. Like,
and that makes sense.
In America, and you never see, it's either shirt off or T-shirt. Mm. No one wears their, like, those singlets they've got, they're more like just race, like they're uniform, I guess. Like, what uniform do you wear? You're not going to wear your uniform. You're not going to, footy players aren't going to wear their footy jumpers to train in. I guess that's how they look at it.
Yeah, but that'd have a whole bit, like, Jack would have a whole lot of just stock Nike singlets, like just those dry fit ones. He's not going to wear his elite racing singlet on training runs.
But the argument is, if it's hot enough for a singlet, it's hot enough for no singlet.
Maybe. Okay. Thanks, Michael Peroni, for your Patreon support. And everyone else over there, got some good content coming in the next couple of days. I'll tell you about that at the end of the show.
If you're missing the ability to race at the moment, then we have news for you about two races that are definitely going ahead on Sunday the 14th of June and Sunday the 12th of July. Our friends at Rapid Ascent are conducting two virtual races over 5, 10 and 15 kilometres as part of their trail running series that anyone, anywhere can compete in. Their virtual race concept is pretty cool because everyone starts their race at the exact same time, so in effect we're all running together. Runners are encouraged to connect through some simple technology they've set up, like a live tracking app, Zoom and or Facebook Live, plus Strava. So there should be a really connected vibe and good banter between the running community on the day. You can race over any style of course, although these guys prefer trails. And with 5, 10 and 15 kilometre options, it puts racing back on the calendar. Entries are now open from $15 per race. Check out the details at www.trailrunningseries.com.au.
Running news, boys. Diamond League's back. Did you see here this announcement?
Let's see this.
August, Monaco's going to kick it off, Gateshead and Stockholm. And then in September, we've got a couple over there in Europe, four of them. And then finishing up in October, Eugene, your place, Moose, Doha. And there's going to be a second meeting in China to be announced. So I think they've cut a few. Did I copy how many they've... Nah, I don't know how many they've cancelled, but what it's going to be like, 10 meets, something like that, 8 meets. Which is going to be weird. Like, people are going to have to get on planes to get to these meets, and some countries aren't going to allow people to get on planes. So I'm not really sure how they're going to, like, you look at some of these places, Rome, Paris, Stockholm, Gateshead, Eugene, Doha, China. Like, whew, I don't know. August, September, October is going to roll around pretty quick.
Yeah, it seems like they've jumped the gun a little bit, especially when you consider a lot of these places, the they haven't got it under control in some of these countries.
Yeah, that could be interesting. Just keep track there. And your mates over in Norway, Moose, Jakob and Hendrik Ingebrigtsen, they're back going for the 5K road record of Norway of the other brother. What's the other brother's name? Norwegians are cracking it now.
Philip.
Oh, Ingebrigtsen. The Philip, Henrik and Jakob.
Oh, Philip's the one with the record. 13:37 on the road. The other two brothers are going to try and beat it on the road. They've got track PBs of 13:02 and 13:15. So that'd be interesting. Good to see, some high-performance elite runnings back happening in different parts of the world. Comments?
Very true. I'm
surprised Philip had that, because isn't he, like, the slower of the three?
Don't know. But is this, like, a legit, like, race or...?
Yeah, because there's someone else who's got a really quick PB in the same race, an African.
Okay.
It's maybe around 27 something. I did. It's legit, mate. It's on Let's Run.
It's not
anything
it's not,
on anything on Let's Run's legit.
It's not a virtual. It's not a virtual race.
Yeah, they're just doing laps around a 200 meter block and use their GPS to claim it.
You blokes can offer them up some pretty good courses, I reckon.
Mate, I'm training on a track. I've coming, got nothing dodgy.
Coming from the Moose, the 1K loop that you use.
Yeah, Vic Park. That is dodgy as. Moose on the loose. You got something?
Nah. That's a good spot. It's very legit.
Actually, miss a listener question, Brad.
Yeah. All right, listener question comes in from Craig Feeney. He says, I'm coming towards the end of a training plan and have no races planned. How do I maintain my fitness in between starting a new plan when races are back on? What is maintenance running and how do I do it effectively? Thanks for your question, Craig. Well, I reckon there's a lot of people out there doing maintenance running.
Oh, yeah, unless you're the Ingebrigtsens, you're doing maintenance running. First thing, Craig, I'd say reduce your mileage. So I'd maybe take 15, 20% off what you've been hitting in that training program, especially if it was a marathon training program, just to, you know, ease back, relax, and just get... I was telling someone about this the other day, like there's that line that you want to stay away from that's like getting super fit but also getting close to an injury line. And now is the time when everyone's just maintaining their fitness to step back and get away from that line, because there's no point risking this training at the moment to, you know, possibly get a stress kind of injury where you could be out for a long period of time.
Yeah, it's a reducing risk for sure. Because it's risk versus benefit relationship, I guess. So you look at what you want, what you could possibly gain from this time and what you could lose and what's worth it or not. So, whether you reduce mileage or you reduce like the severity or the harshness or the sharpness of workouts, just slash a bit off the top maybe of what you normally could do, maybe 10% or so off the top. But stick to a plan, have some structure. That's one thing, like it's sort of, this question sort of suggests is that, oh, I've got no plan anymore, because it sounds like the plan's been sort of structured around a race. But that doesn't mean that you just go willy-nilly, you just go and do whatever you feel like. You still can have a good coach who can guide you through this period. I think it's probably more important now than ever.
Mm, yeah, I agree with you. And just even having those conversations with a coach about like what your goals are going to be long term, so then they can set stuff around what this maintenance period looks like, because it's going to be different for different people depending on what their goals are. And even looking back at your, like if you did a 16-week marathon program, looking at some of those workouts you've done, working out some of your zones, and you might have to recover from that as well. Brad?
Yeah, the only thing I'd add, like a lot of my athletes, like if they're training, like if they're marathoners, rather than like doing like super long marathon sessions, it's more about just covering all bases during this period without getting, I guess, too hot to the iron sort of thing. So like what I'm doing with my long run. So if somebody was training for a marathon, like their long runs are going to be like 2 hours 30 most weeks. But, you know, I'm now sort of going, well, just do one of those a month and then, you know, have a recovery week and then have like a 2-hour 15 run, then go back to 2 hours. So just varying the mileage, but still keeping in touch so that within the space of 8 weeks, they could actually be in good marathon shape if they wanted to be. So it's really about covering all bases so that, yeah, in the space of 8 weeks, you could be, you know, in good 5K shape or good marathon shape. So, yeah.
And there's one thing that we've all mentioned, like I think Moose, you said you're going into a down week. Brad, you come off a down week a couple of weeks ago. About a month ago, I took like 4 days just to sort out a little Achilles niggle. Like this is the perfect time to schedule in those down weeks and also sort out any little niggles you've got planned or got, you know, got growing on you.
And also enjoy going into sessions with like no pressure. You know, like it doesn't matter if, you know, you have an off session or you feel like just bludging a little bit. It doesn't matter.
Mm. And do different sessions so you don't compare them to the sessions you were doing in your program, like your plan that you spoke about before.
Yeah. All right. Very good.
Moose on the loose?
No, I've got nothing.
Got nothing? Nothing. What's coming up? Brad, Melissa Duncan this week, friend of the show.
Yeah, so I reached out to her and we're planning on having a chat Friday. So she's actually back in Japan now. She's signed on for another season. And I'm really actually looking forward to catching up with Liz because she's had a lot happen in the last 12 months. So, yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, a bit happened since last time she was on the show. I'm catching up with Watto this Saturday as well. So, patrons, you'll see Melissa Duncan, that's at that extra level, and Ash Watson coming on to defend himself, Julian.
Yeah, right. I'll make sure I'll get some questions in. Give us a heads up.
Yeah, ask him about his training plan. It's quite unique.
It just runs at like 3:35, 3:40s every day.
He's fully aware it's a really dumb training plan.
I feel like he's doing it to piss you off.
he could well be. He's got an eye opener on the weekend, you know, when Ferg runs that time. He was supposed to come down that morning and do that. He's lucky he didn't show up, put it that way. So he got a bit of a kick up the ass by seeing all these other blokes nice and fit.
Well, you don't reckon he would have run that? You don't reckon he would have run that?
Three tens.
No, he wouldn't have run that. The joke is that he can run 3:30s all day, but as soon as he gets to 3:20, he starts falling, and 3:10s not in his arsenal.
I want to ask him too, because he kind of does those runs with Mona on the bike, it says in his Strava notes. Like, surely Mona would be in his ear saying, hey, there's no point running at this pace. Like, rather go slower or go faster.
Yeah, but Watto's got his own ideas. Like, Mona might say something, but those guys have known each other for years and years and years, and Watto's got his own plans.
Yeah. Why doesn't Mona ride with you, Moose?
Because I don't run at fucking 1 p.m, mate. I don't have that sort of luxury in my life.
You could have today, didn't you? Yeah.
This is another like statement that just comes back to bite him.
Mona did ride with me today. He rode in our group run.
Doesn't count unless you put it in your notes on Strava.
It's not one-on-one.
No one-on-one time. But get this, though. You want to hear a little nice Mona story. So he was there. He rode on Saturday morning with us at the front, me and Ferg. Afterwards, he rode with me for my 300s. And I was like, oh, yeah, this session was kind of shit. Whatever. Moved on. And then he called me, left a voicemail during the day. I was at work. He said, oh, mate, that was a really good session. I think you're underestimating it, and just wanted to let you know, like, you're going really well. And I'd be a little bit more confident than what you were today. I think that's a great session. And I was like, fuck yeah, what a pump up. Needed that. Thanks, Mona.
That's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah. So he looks out for the boys. Don't worry. Checks in on everyone.
That is very cool. That's actually. What else is coming up? Oh, our friends over at Runners Tribe, they asked us if we could tell the listeners about these virtual runs. So not the virtual races that Brad has so much love for. These are actual virtual runs. If you're like on a treadmill or an exercise bike, or maybe you just love running on your spot, or like in your lounge room or something like that, you can put these on a TV in front of you. And they've got one up I was watching the other day with Dave McNeil, two-time Olympian, and he pretty much, I think he's taken a GoPro on like his 70, 80-minute run, and you get to see all the scenery why he's out there running. He's on the bike path, people are passing him, like people are coming the opposite way. It's kind of a pretty cool way to connect to nature, and if you're into nature and you're stuck on an exercise bike somewhere, or Treddy, this would be perfect for you. So head over to Runners Tribe for a bit more information there. And I think we are done, boys. What's coming up in your life, Bradley?
What is coming up in my life? Oh, the footy's back 10 days. 10 days and the Raiders are back on TV. So super pumped. Outside of that, back to work, I think, next week. All of the kids are back at school. Yeah, and training-wise this week will be pretty low key, 150K, no sort of super sessions.
Have you seen the Raiders are doing like this 5K challenge the Raiders kind of thing, a virtual run? You can get your name on a record kind of board?
Yeah, I did actually see that. And I don't like these virtual runs, but I was tempted. I was tempted to go and post a time.
19 minutes is the top time at the moment.
Yeah, I think they're doing it until the footy starts back. So
yeah,
maybe I will.
Looked it up today. I was going to submit one for you.
Yeah, so maybe I should have stopped my session at 5K on Friday.
Yeah, watch Strava, listeners. Moose, what's going up in your life?
No, it's going to be a very simple week for me. I'm going to go to probably Geelong on the weekend.
What toy are you going to buy this week?
What toy? Yeah, I'm going to have to find something. Give me that self-gratification of consumerism.
Moose's toy of the week. Any new shoes, jet and dropped or anything this week in the store?
Well, hopefully fucking Nike and New Balance start delivering some shit because they haven't in the last few weeks. So Shams any type of shoe would be nice. Any type of shoe, please. We're trying to buy them, but it's not their fault. It's fucking Toll.
All right, boys.
What are you doing, Brady?
I'm just working, Brad. Just essential service kids. Just on the front line of this coronavirus stuff. Just teaching. Grade 3, I'm with. So is ACT all back next week?
My school, they started back this week where they just introduced the seniors. And then next week it's the seniors and the year 7s. And then the week after that, it's everybody. Yeah, so I'll be back in once it's everybody. But even then, I'm in there for PE, and I saw an email sent out about there's restrictions to what you can do in PE now. You know, you can't go and play touch footy. You can't go and play soccer. So it's pretty much reduced to, like, handball, tennis, cricket. Yeah, so I don't know what we'll be doing.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we're done, boys. Scott Nicholas is coming in now to tell us about the winner of the Australian Best Distance Runner Performance of all time. See you later.
See you guys.
See ya.
All right, Scott Nicholas is back for the very last time. We'll probably hear from you some time down the road, I'm sure, Scott, but you're going to tell us who the semi-final winners are and also the final winner tonight. So welcome once again to the Inside Running Podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me once again and putting up with me for the last, however many weeks we've been doing it. So, yeah, no, it's been good. So grand finale tonight.
Grand finale. We did put a post on Facebook yesterday, friend of the show, Ash Watson. Not sure if you know Ash Scott, but he's a bit of a gambling man and often sends us through hot tips, and he got a bit of a book started. He kind of he had Ron Clark and Herb Elliott there, the first battle tonight. He had Ron Clark at $1.60 and Herb Elliott at $2.25. And then in the second head-to-head, he had Benita Johnson at $1.45 and Ralph DeBell at $2.40. So any comments there? Kind of, there was interesting to hear a couple of comments that come in from the listeners with their opinions.
Well, I'm not much of a betting man myself, but I'm not sure how he came up with those. So is there any context behind how he's come up with this stuff? I like it.
Do you know any more, Moose? I just said to him, give me some odds.
He's not a very good freaking gambler, so this is probably just proof of that.
So this is just bullshit, basically.
I think he did write a comment in there saying, like, I maybe should have done a bit more research or something.
Yeah, sure. I did have a read of the comments, though, and I was entertained by that. It's just good to... You know, everyone's got good opinions on it. No one's right. No one's wrong. So, it was good. It's just good to see the banter. That was one of the original ideas behind it.
For sure. Well, where do you want to start telling us the winners?
Yeah, let's hook right in here. So, first matchup we had in the semis, we had Herb Elliott and his gold medal performance, world record, and the 1500 in Rome 60. Up against Ron Clark's amazing 13:16 5K from Stockholm in July of 66. Again, going back to Ron Clark, you had essentially over the course of 12 years, 41 seconds got knocked out of the 5K world record. Taking it all the way down himself alone, over the course of a year and a half, from 13:35 to 13:16, and that 13:16 was really just the icing on a much bigger cake. That was a lot of icing, taking that much time off of it, basically 8 seconds. But at the end of the day, if anyone who's been serious about their running, especially track and field, says that you've got a gold medal and a world record in one race, that's going to win over a world record, regardless of how much that world record was by. So Herb Elliott for the win there.
Herb through to the final.
That's it. So probably no real surprises there, but that's certainly no discredit to Ron Clark or even Derek Clayton or Deke, you know, some of the runners that were in the quarterfinals. So epic performances when you're getting to this level, not just by Australian standards. These are, if you had a distance running contest of this type of scenario anywhere in the world, these names are on that list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. I think what stands out as well about like Ron Clark is it makes you realize how hard it is to win an Olympic gold medal, because he was so dominant for so long. But, you know, it's the only thing that he didn't achieve really was that Olympic gold medal. And it goes to show you can be like dominant for a decade and it's still not get it.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen both of his races from Tokyo in 64, from, you know, gun to finish. And they're fascinating races. I mean, you know, he is a significant player in both of those races. And if you run each of those races 10 times, you know, he might win 8 of those times. Mm. You know, but, you know, the Olympics is the Olympics. It's a pressure cooker of, you know, the utmost magnitude that, you know, only a handful of people ultimately ever conquer.
Yeah. Very true.
The other one, Benito and Ralph DeBell.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. And really, it's interesting for a couple of reasons. So Benito winning World Cross in Brussels in 2004, I was looking at this a little bit more. I mean, the field that she beat in this race. So DeBaba, who gets second, is an Olympic silver medalist in the 10K. Kidane was the defending World Cross Country champion and also has a world 10,000 meter silver medal. You have Kiplagat in sixth place, who ends up winning World Cross a couple of years later. Jeff Carrier in seventh wins an Olympic Olympic silver medal in the steeple. And then Sally Barsocio back in 10th ends up being a world 10,000 meter champion. So you simply cannot argue that Benita's win wasn't over the highest quality field at any level. And I'm not even counting all of the other women that were in the top 10 that ended up being world cross country medalists, either in the short or the long race back then. So like the field was absolutely ridiculous that she beat, and she beat them by 12 seconds. So that's significant. DeBell, on the other hand, I'm going to make a few more points about that in a minute. I'm just going to get to the chase. DeBell's the winner here, again, from the standpoint that he wins an Olympic gold medal and he equals a world record in an Olympic final. I mean, again, any runner who's run cross, track, roads, whatever, that is the pinnacle. So DeBell's the winner there. I'm going to save a couple of points until the final matchup, which obviously now is Herb Elliott against Ralph DeBell. Are we jumping straight in?
Any comments there, boys? Must have been hard to pick that.
I don't know. I think winning the gold medal, equaling a world record, that takes over eighth place. I mean, although it's World Cross. Oh, no, sorry.
Takes over eighth, place. First place.
She won World Cross, right? But World Cross back then was what, every 2 years? Or was it every year at that point?
Don't they say it's the hardest race to win? Isn't that the same with World Cross?
Yeah, I think it's every 2 years, Moose, still back then.
Every 2 years, yeah. Okay, so, yeah, it might be, but it's a tough one. Maybe I'm underplaying.
And she's got to beat six.
It was actually every year. It was every year back then, so, because Kidane had won it the year before.
And with multiple distances back then, right?
It was, but the long course was the win. Like, the long course was the race. They implemented the short course because they wanted to try to get, like, I think they implemented in the era of El Garouge, and they wanted, like, the El Garouges of the world to come out and try to win the 4K. That's why it started. But the long course was the race. And for sure, like, I mean, from a lot, especially in this era and previous to this era, World Cross was probably the hardest race to win, but I think when it still comes down to the pressure of winning a championship race, you cannot go past an Olympic final from any account of anyone that's run all of these races. You don't hear people talking about, you know, the hour or 2 hours before World Cross. you hear him talking about what it's like right before an Olympic final, and there's simply nothing like it. And that's, this is not to diminish, you know, Benita's accomplishment at all. I mean, the fact is that she's the only Australian to ever win World Cross. And she, you know, it's beyond compare, that type of performance. But we're comparing it against winning an Olympic final and equaling a world record.
Yeah, a lot more people in the audience too to perform in front of when you're in a stadium at the Olympics. That, like, the pressure factor could change a bit.
Either way, I mean, both of these performances are ridiculously phenomenal. I think it, you know, it comes down to the value of, do we value an Olympic gold medal on the track over a world cross country gold medal? And, you know, it'd be interesting to hear Benita's thoughts on it as well, and going, if you could trade, you know, an Olympic gold medal on the track or world cross country gold medal, you know, she might say both are of equal value to me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. She might say one or the other. She might say world cross.
Yeah, I just looked up the men's results that same day. Bekele won the long and the short course. Well, they wouldn't have been the same day. Kipchoge in fourth, Tedesi in sixth. Pretty deep men's race.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess the factor of going up against, like, six Kenyans, six Ethiopians, you know, you could say that the Olympics you only go up against three Kenyans and three Ethiopians. And then that's so hard to compare. The dominance of East Africa in 2004 when Benita did it, you know, up against the Olympics for Ralph de Bell. Yeah. Tell us more about that performance there, Scott. We're getting off track.
All right, so let's just get to the final, because it was interesting. I personally thought this was really straightforward, and it was not. And I'm gonna lay out a couple of points here. First of all, so Herb Elliott. So when he first set the world record of 3:36.0, he had taken 2.1 seconds off of Youngworth's world record. So when he got to the Olympic final, he took 0.4 of a second off of his own world record. You know, he had a career that was undefeated, but he broke his own world record in an Olympic final. Like, that's phenomenal in itself. Now, I started to really pick this apart, especially in the last couple days, when I kind of wanted to, like I said, I thought it was pretty straightforward, but it's not. The IAAF awards 1,166 points for his performance of 3:35.6. So this is the level of detail we're getting down to now when we're splitting these performances. You get to Dubell, and he has equaled a Snell world record. So what are we weighing more here, a Snell world record and tying that, or breaking a time that you've run yourself? That's one thing here. The other thing to keep in mind with Dubell, he wasn't the favorite. Wilson Kiprigut was the favorite from Kenya. Dubell hadn't raced in 6 months at all leading into the Olympics because of an Achilles injury. And really, his only significant performance before 1968 was the year before, when he had run 146.7 at the World Student Games. So, like, coming out of essentially, he wasn't no one by any stretch, but to say that he was going to tie the world record and to win the gold medal in 68 in Mexico City would have been unfathomable, in my opinion, based on those statistics alone. Then you get to the time itself. So IAAF points for that performance is 1,192. Now, I went back to Elliott's performance. If Elliott were to have the equivalent level performance, he would have needed to run 3:33.70. So all of a sudden, when you start getting all of those factors lined up, you're like, wow, this is not so straightforward. This is not necessarily Herb Elliott for the guaranteed win. So the committee realized these things, and there was definitely debate back and forth. In the end, Herb Elliott for the win,
and the champ.
So Herb Elliott for the win, basically because he did break the world record and not tie the world record. So again, back to Dubell, like, this contest or this virtual contest is about a single performance. And to do what he did, and he had a quote somewhere that basically said, oh, I was doing time trials, but I didn't find it even necessary to prepare for the Olympics. You think about the confidence that he must have had to go to the Olympics and go, I'm happy with doing time trials. I don't need to race. That's ridiculous. Whereas Elliott was expected to win, and he had a career of being undefeated. Really interesting, in my opinion, back and forth.
And during that race when Herb Elliott won, if you read the description of the race and sort of Herb's take on it, they basically allowed it to happen, didn't they? Like,
yeah,
it was set up for him. No one was willing to push him at any point during the race. He just went to work and did it. It was all perfect for him that day.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and I think I made this comment, Moose, when you put it up on the Running Company Ballarat's Facebook page, when you put Radisha's world record up from 2012. I mean, kind of a similar performance, just command of the race.
Mm, and yeah, he owned it.
Yeah, and this to me is why Elliott's the champion of this virtual contest. He took command of an Olympic final and broke a world record. And how many people have done that from any country over the history? There's not a lot, and their names are very great names at the end of the day. Mm. But, you know, Jebel, I mean, watching his race, that was tactical perfection watching that race. I mean, he Dave Waddle ends up running the same exact time 4 years later to tie that world record again. So there were three simultaneous world record holders in the 800. And everyone, you know, kind of talks about Waddle's performance, how he was in last place at 200 and works his way through the field and how brilliant
this
he was.
This is the video with the hat on.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that's always on Facebook, that video.
But Jebel was tactically better because he was smarter earlier. You know, he puts himself in the right position, and I've read about the race, and he's thinking himself through the race as it happens. So, you know, he must have practiced that in his head. He would have been completely confident around executing the plan, but he was not the favorite. So, I don't know, both amazing performances. Really hard to split it, but that's what we have to do.
Good work, Scott. And just looking back over some of the people that Herb Elliott went up against over this competition, started off against Brett Robertson in the first round, then Trevor Vincent, then Graham Crouch, and then Derek Clayton, and then Ron Clark, and then Ralph DeBell. So it wasn't like he had a lucky draw where he just snuck through.
No, there was none of that here. There were definitely some tough draws in there from round one, but you had a guy like DeBell had to go against bloody two politicians. He's up against the Victorian governor in the quarterfinals, and then in the finals, he's up against... Oh, no, he never made it to the... That was right. Elliott had to take on the mayor of Gold Coast in the semis with Ron Clark. So we had politicians even in the top eight.
What have you learned over these last couple of weeks, Scott, like doing all this research with these panelists and like getting this information from TV and Len Johnson? Like, what's your biggest learning been out of all of it?
Oh, I've just loved the detail. I love the detail. Like, I'm a nerd at the end of the day with this stuff. So I knew, you know, the significant stuff, but to learn some of the maybe for me lesser known athletes, just because I didn't grow up here. That's been really cool. But then, like, this kind of stuff, you get into the finals and you're getting really specific of going, oh, well, wow, Herb Elliott's time wasn't actually quite as good as DuBell's if you go on, you know, these kind of things. And it's just interesting to me when you get to this level. So I just kind of nerd out and just keep going down a few layers. And I know there's people out there that do it deeper than me, but... But I've really enjoyed just digging in myself as well.
Yeah, and on behalf of all our listeners, thanks for, like, you guys gave up your own time to do all this research and put these documents together. And we really just called you every Monday night and you told us about it. So we didn't really do much preparation or much work at all. So, thanks for giving us so much insight into the history of Australian distance running. And, you know, 64 performances we started off with. And I'm not sure about Moose and Brad, but I definitely probably didn't know half of those performances and the details surrounding. Like, obviously, you knew the big names, but yeah, there was probably a third or two thirds in there that I didn't know details around. So, and I'm sure there's a lot of listeners in the same boat. So, yeah, big thanks for giving up the time and coming on for these, I reckon, probably last 5 or 6 weeks and telling us all about it.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you guys taking an interest in it and putting it out there, because yeah, it is, it's fun to kind of, you know, learn something through this. And just a really special thanks as well to the committee members, the nameless committee members, but also Trevor Vincent and Len Johnson as well. Like, the passion that those guys have for the sport, you know, I think it's important that that stuff gets carried to the next generation, and those guys being willing to share their time and their information and is just really appreciated. And I think, you know, it's just been amazing speaking with guys like that throughout as well. So thanks to those guys.
Anything else, cool. Dan, boys, before we let Scott go?
No, just thanks again, Scott, to you and your team. It's been great, and like, I've learned so much. Like, for a guy that's been, I guess, heavily involved in the sport for 20 years, like, as Brady said, like, you know the household names, but there's so many athletes that you could walk down the street past them and you wouldn't even know that they've been to the Olympics. So it's good to remind the public of how many good athletes we've had in the past, and that there's more than just sort of the 10 or 15 household names out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's how we build the future when you know the past. So,
yeah, cool. Thanks, Scott. It was good to learn.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, thanks, guys, and all the best, and we'll catch up soon.
No worries, Scott. Thanks, yeah, Scott. See you, mate.
See ya.
Take care.
Remember that racing is back on the calendar, with the two virtual races being held as part of the Trail Running Series presented by Mini, happening in mid-June and July. Entries are just $15 each, which means it's game on for everyone. Enter after the show at www.trailrunningseries.com.au.